here in place of David Gustafson, who is the principal investigator of the study. So I'll do my best to share the results with you. I have the same disclosure as before. Nothing has changed in the last hour. So I'm just going to dive right into things, talk about the analytic plan. I think if you have questions as they come up, feel free to ask. I'm going to cover a lot of material in this presentation, so feel free to jump in. We did a mixed effect regression model to the aggregated monthly waiting time and continuation rates for each clinic. So we looked at individual patient records aggregated there. Each patient has a waiting time and a continuation outcome. We aggregated those up to a monthly level and then fit the regression model to those observations. The model included terms to isolate state and intervention or group effects. We aggregated the number of new patients up to an annual level to compensate for seasonal variations in the number of new patients treated. And the unit of analysis is the clinic. So even though this is based on individual patient records, that aggregation did make the unit of analysis the clinic, not the patient. So then we looked at pairwise comparisons between each of the four groups. We looked at covariates including clinic size, management score, and state location. And the analysis was intention to treat. So though Kyle did a presentation on levels of participation, we're not considering levels of participation in this analysis. Basically, if you enrolled and you had any outcome data for us to analyze, those clinics were included in the analysis. Kind of review here. The first, we're going to look at these three outcomes. The first focus was waiting time. Second focus was continuation, and then the number of new patients. And in the beginning, the waiting time at baseline was about 36 days from first contact to first treatment. Average continuation rate was 73%. The average size of the clinics was 563 new patients per year. And we did a covariate analysis, and we found that the covariates I mentioned earlier were associated with differences in baseline levels for these outcomes, but they weren't associated with changes in the level of outcomes over time. So we're going to be looking at just the unadjusted outcomes. Allocation and follow-up. So we randomly assigned at the beginning of the project. We had roughly 50 clinics in each group. The allocation ratio was equal. So looking down the chart here, the loss to follow-up, we included everybody if we had any outcomes data, but there were cases where we had no data to analyze. Program closure could be one reason. We had some cases where a clinic enrolled and then shut down within the first couple of months. In those cases, we didn't have time to get any data collected, so we had nothing to work with. Notably, we had several other closures as part of the study. We did analyze data for clinics that closed as long as we had something right up to the point of closure. Time and scheduling issues was the other kind of big reason. This gets to a couple of examples of things that can happen if a learning session, for example, the first learning session was scheduled on a day when a clinic had a quality audit and there's no way that they could attend. So not being able to attend the first learning session, they dropped out and didn't submit any data over the course of the study. Another example in the coaching arm would be a clinic that had an EHR implementation going on simultaneously and decided they just couldn't dedicate any time. So we basically lost 11 clinics due to these issues out of 201. We had no data to analyze, so we were able to look at least some outcomes data for about 95% of the participants, and they were included in our analysis that follows. So this is the change in waiting time by group And hopefully it shows up pretty well there. But we're looking at, there's basically kind of two sections to this graph. The first 6 months is the waiting time intervention period. So there's a line fitted to the first 6 months of data, and then the following 9 months is the sustainability period. So if you look along the bottom, let's see if the point works here. Looking along the bottom of the chart here, this is the intracircle call arm, the low-cost, low-intensity group. And basically, there's no change over the 15-month period of analysis in intracircles. Going then to the other extreme, the combination arm is the purple series here. We see a pretty significant and rapid improvement in the first 6 months. So in the first 6 months, the combination arm kind of takes off and has the most improvement. And then there's sort of a leveling off effect in the sustainability period. The coaching arm here is the red data series. So there's a pretty significant improvement in the first 6 months and then some further improvement in the sustainability period. The green series is learning sessions, and there we see a pretty steady, slow and steady improvement in the first 6 months and then continued slow and steady improvement in the following 9 months. So that's the picture there. I'll get into the stats here next. There's obviously a load of information on this chart. I've highlighted in gray the significant improvements. So in the first, this is looking at the first 6 months only. In the first 6 months, coaching and the combination arm both had significant improvements in waiting time. And then looking at the pairwise comparisons are at the bottom of this table. The difference between coaching and intracircle calls was significant, as well as the difference between the combination and intracircle calls. Learning sessions didn't quite reach the level of significance that the others did. So extending this out to the full 15-month period, we have fairly highly significant improvements in coaching in the combination arm over this whole period. Learning sessions continues improving, so reaches a level of significance. The same pairwise comparisons are also significant between the combination arm and intracircles and the coaching and intracircle call arms. Moving on to continuation, this is the chart showing the change in continuation over time. Those lines are basically pretty flat and pretty close together, and it appears that way because they are. We didn't actually see any significant improvement in continuation for any of the groups, and we didn't see any significant differences in continuation between any of the groups. This table basically tells the same story. I won't spend a lot of time going through it. Nothing came out as significant in continuation. Finally, the third outcome is the number of new patients. Here we're looking at the four groups again. The green data series learning sessions and the blue data series are intracircle calls. Both have basically flat or even slightly declining levels of this outcome. And the combination and coaching arms show some improvement. Coaching actually has the greatest improvement in the number of new patients. Looking at the significance levels, again, coaching comes out with a significant improvement in the number of new patients, as does the combination arm. The difference between the pairwise comparisons between coaching and intracircles is significant, as well as the difference between combination and the intracircle call arm. So I should point out that even though coaching has the greatest improvement here, the difference between coaching and combination was not statistically significant. So basically, they both improved, and we can't really say which one improved more. So just to do a quick results summary, there's a lot of information presented there, but to sum things up for the effectiveness measures, Infracircle calls didn't have any effect on any outcome. Coaching had a positive impact on waiting time and the number of new patients. Luring sessions had a marginally positive impact on waiting time, but no effect on the number of new patients. And the combination arm had a positive impact on waiting time and the number of new patients. The scale of these improvements, again, we had 36-day waiting time at baseline, and the improvement levels were around 6 to 7 days. So we're looking at approximately, improvements on the order of 15 to 20% for waiting time, and improvements on the level of 10 to 20% for the number of new patients. So we didn't see, this was an intention to treat analysis, so you have to remember that clinics that didn't participate all that much are included in these figures. We didn't just pick the ones who did well. I guess we didn't have any slam dunk 90% improvements across the board, but keep in mind that it's a randomized trial, prospective data collection. So this is, I guess, more consistent with the idea that organizational change is more incremental than things happen on an incremental level, and these improvements are moderate but significant. So the picture, we have four groups and three outcomes. It's a complex study. The picture is kind of muddy at this point, but I think the cost-effectiveness analysis really helps to clarify what we found in our study. Again, we looked at costs at two levels. For the state, we tracked costs at the state level and at the research team level. We collected cost data every 6 months over about a two-year period. And our perspective here is from the state administrator. We're not looking at the perspective of the clinics, even though we acknowledge that there is some level of commitment and time and money involved with participating in quality improvement, going to meetings, participating in training, travel, and those types of things. But we're looking primarily from the state level. That was something that was the clinic level costs were outside of the scope of what we can do with the project. So the question is, if I'm the state administrator, how much do I have to spend to reduce waiting time and increase the number of new patients among the treatment centers in my state? So these are the costs. They probably don't mean a whole lot by themselves, but keep in mind that if you want the average cost, you divide these through by about 50. That's the number of clinics in each arm. I think one of the things that was a little surprising to me is that coaching was actually quite a bit less expensive than learning sessions. I wouldn't have known in advance. I wouldn't have been able to say which one was going to cost more, but as it turns out, coaching was pretty significantly less expensive than learning sessions. Intracircle calls are obviously the least expensive. We sort of knew that going in. And the combination is clearly the most expensive by piling all these things together. So the cost effectiveness figures we have here are if you accumulate all of the waiting days that were avoided and then divide the cost through by that figure, it cost $1.08 for each avoided waiting day for the coaching intervention and $16 for each additional patient. So compare that to learning sessions, it basically cost twice as much to have the same level of impact on waiting time, and learning sessions didn't have any clear effect on the number of new patients. The combination had effects on waiting time and the number of new patients, but it cost a lot more to do it than it did in coaching. Those were just the intervention costs. There's lots of other costs involved with doing a study like this. Outreach, recruitment, data management, keeping programs involved, miscellaneous costs. So we wanted to make sure that we kept track of these as we're going along. And there's a lot of data to try to digest here as well, but I just want to point out, I think the important takeaway from this is that the most significant costs that are sort of overhead that don't depend on the intervention relate to data management and data infrastructure. So it's a little bit unclear to what extent those costs are an artifact of doing a research project. We obviously had to invest heavily into making sure that we could collect the outcomes that we needed to evaluate the study. But you know, if you're a state trying to improve services, collecting data is probably going to be important, even if it's not a research study. So that's something to consider. Data management, data infrastructure costs are pretty significant in doing improvement work like this. So this slide or this table adds the overhead or engagement costs to the intervention costs. So this doesn't really change the story at all. It just inflates the cost effectiveness figures. So where it was, I think, $1.08 for an improvement of one waiting day in coaching before, now it's $2.52 and $38 for a new patient. But you still have, you know, coaching is the most cost effective approach, and combination is the most expensive. So just to summarize the results again, we didn't see any effect on any of the outcomes with intracircles, so it doesn't seem like distance learning is an effective approach to quality improvement in the addiction treatment field. Coaching is less expensive and more effective than learning sessions, so from a cost-effectiveness perspective, coaching dominates learning sessions. And adding learning sessions and intracircles to coaching basically doesn't have any improvement in effect, but it does add a lot in the way of costs. So it's based on this overall balance of evidence that we're making the conclusion that coaching is the active ingredient in our QI collaborative. And I guess we have to step back and consider this question: is quality improvement worth it? Cost-effectiveness studies usually have a standard outcome of cost per quality-adjusted life year saved or gained. You know, we don't have that in this study. We're looking at reduced waiting days and increasing the number of patients treated. So that's kind of out by itself. We have nothing to really compare ourselves against. If you're using dollars per quality, you know that if you can save a quality for less than $100,000, you're cost effective, and if it costs more than that, then you're not cost effective. We have no such reference point. So we just have to go with face validity here. Is it worth $2.52 to save a day of waiting for someone who needs help? Is it worth spending $38 to get a new a person into treatment who wouldn't otherwise? Those seem like worthwhile investments, but you know, that's just one person's opinion, I guess. Limitations. We think, you know, we didn't see any effect on continuation. We started at 73%, which is a pretty average baseline continuation rates, and that's pretty well up there, considering that 100% is as good as it can get for continuation. So that didn't leave a whole lot of room for improvement, and we think that might have had played some role and are not seeing any effect on that outcome. Blinding was not feasible in the study, I think, for a lot of reasons that are fairly obvious. It's hard to go to a learning session but not know what you're getting, for instance. And then generalizability issues. I mean, Kyle talked about this. The clinics that participated are bigger than most addiction treatment clinics, but they're still pretty small by most healthcare standards. And, you know, we have to assume that these are clinics who are more willing to change than those who didn't sign up. So where do we go next here? You know, healthcare has lots of problems that have organizational roots. You know, we don't have, it takes 17 years on average for an evidence-based practice to become adopted. We lose a lot of lives to medical errors, preventable medical errors. We have the problems of other chronic diseases. You know, we think that we obviously consider addiction a chronic disease, and diseases like diabetes and hypertension have a lot of the same issues of access and adherence to treatment that we face in addiction treatment. So could the coaching approach be extended there? Maybe. I guess further research would be needed to know. But we conclude that coaching is the active ingredient in our collaborative And it shows to be, or proves to be, a cost-effective way of solving organizational problems. So for more information, we've had a few papers published, the main outcomes papers under review currently, but these papers are available at this time. And then just to acknowledge, I acknowledge all the same people that we did before, but I think the many, many more are the, we had roughly, an estimate would be 1,500 individuals at these clinics that participated in the study, and without their involvement and their dedication to improving quality, this study would have never been possible. So I wanted to thank all those participants.
Thank you, Andy.
Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna repeat the question because we're recording this. So the question was, what is coaching and how was it implemented in this context? And Dennis suggested that Kim might want to answer this question.
Kim, microphone.
I didn't coach in this project.
So coaching is consulting. I mean, I think that's a simple way to explain it. And so. It has a teaching component, a one-on-one with the organization teaching component. It has a one-on-one with the organization consulting sort of advice component, and there's a support part of it as well. So they're trying to cheerlead your group as they're doing their work. And really, it was around the quality improvement activities for the specific aim that they were trying to achieve. So if you're trying to reduce your wait times, what are some of the things that you can do to if you're trying to reduce wait times for intake, how do you change your intake process so that it happens quicker? Reducing paperwork, responding to people on their first call as opposed to doing the phone tag thing. So some of it's pretty basic and simple, just how do we change the process? And a lot of coaching is telling people what other people have done that's been successful so that they can just copy. I mean, that really is a huge, from at least when I coach, that's a huge part of what you do, is say, oh, well, I know this other agency and this is what they did. Does that help?
A little bit of cheerleading as well. Yeah. Please.
Condition. And I almost wonder, I think you pointed out that people could have been blind to the condition that they were in for obvious reasons. And I wonder if the phone condition was being viewed as we're not getting enough. It's almost like you weren't asking them to invest enough time and energy into participation for it to be worth their while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what I was wondering. I might be way off.
Yeah, no, I think that's... the question was about whether the Interest Circle call arms had the greatest dropout because it wasn't seen as valuable by the participants. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's what it got to. And I think that's true. I mean, we sensed that as time went on that, I mentioned earlier that we wanted to have a web-only group, but we were told basically that, well, that's not worth our while to participate in a study like this just to get access to a website. So we kicked it up to Interest Circle, the monthly phone call, but that's still kind of at the borderline of what's worthwhile. We did see, things started out more strongly in terms of participation and just kind of dwindled over an 18-month period in terms of the number of clinics who were showing up month to month. So, yeah, that's certainly, I think...
Last question. We'll have more time later. Go ahead.
Did you have a sense that the programs participated in this because they were really good and wanted to get better, or they were really bad and desperate by the time they were funded by the state agency?
There's no simple answer to that question. I think one thing I've come to realize is that anything you want to look at is a random variable. So you have like a bell curve of, you know.
Most institutions of organization theory would say these are probably pretty good after flexible, informed type programs, and that they're not really full performers in the state systems.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really have a way of looking. You know, Kyle's analysis sort of looked at that, but it's, you know, I don't know what we would use to measure whether they're good or bad. We could, you know, I could see other avenues for research there, but yeah, it's hard to say. My sense is that by and large they were good organizations trying to get better. You know, there were a few organizations that didn't seem so good, but they were ones who I think felt pressure to participate from the state authorities, and they also didn't participate very actively. So. Hard to say.
Thank you, Andy.